Okay, so here goes the repeat. Good afternoon. Welcome to the June 13th, 2022 meeting of the Tlalom PUD Commission. So, all right, we're going to kick this off. We got a long agenda today, so we need to get to work. The first item will be comments from the public. So, T, if you will let people in as they request.
Yes, I will.
And Will, to start that off, we did receive a letter today through email from Emily Scavarda on behalf of Estes Builders. And the comment / letter was related to the nationwide transformer shortage. And I emailed the letter to all three commissioners this morning. John Purvis, along with some other staff, have multiple agenda items on this today. So I'm hoping that the questions and the concerns will get answered during those presentations.
Yes, Emily, I hope we do answer your questions. I read your letter. So, Emily, go ahead.
Great. Yeah, I mean, I think if you've read the letter, then you kind of know where we're coming from. And I'm sure that you're all aware. We just, you know, we first want to sort of thank everyone for what they are doing, because we know that this is of concern for everyone. You know, but as a builder, it's really a big problem for us if we can't get transformers. There's a consensus among all of the builders. We've talked kind of with the Northern Peninsula Building Association, and if we don't have transformers, we really can't build. So we're really hoping that these resolutions are looking, you know, in a more like long-term solution beyond just sort of the kind of short-term shortfalls of transformers. And you know, I know that this is a big problem across the country, so it's not just Tlalom, but we're looking for like an expedient solution that, yeah, hopefully with some details of when we can maybe expect some transformers, or else our business will be very severely impacted along with many others that we support.
Okay, thank you. We have other comments. Mr. Logan. Are you muted?
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, that's great. Sure.
Thanks. My name is Logan Hammond. I own property over on 303 Mill Road in Carlsberg. Talking about water, I know that's a topic the PUD has been working on for a long time. It's talked about a lot. Anyways, we have put in an application for a 53-unit manufactured home community with a target towards workforce housing. We have worked with the county to meet all the requirements, and I understand that there's water available, but not enough water right that they feel comfortable releasing water to us this time, and I know people are working on it. We are inside the UGA, and I would just like to request, you know, first of all, we'd like to get water. I mean, that's no surprise to anybody. And secondly, I would like to be able to discuss this maybe further with the commissioners or a commissioner to kind of explain our case. But the need is now, and the water is here. And so we're just asking what can be done to expedite water service to this community.
Yeah, you might also want to talk to Tom Martin, our water superintendent. He's right on top of this, so that may help as well. But thank you for your comments. Do we have other comments? Yes, Lisa.
Good afternoon. My name is Lisa Donaldson, and I also have a family property in Carlsberg, which has been slated for development for many years, and we are also in the same position that the prior speaker was, that we have not been able to move forward on any project or even selling the property based on the fact that we're in line hoping for water rights. And recently I sent a letter to your office just to remind you that we have been waiting for some time and hope that you'll continue pursuing additional water so that we can get the water rights. It's been many, many years that we've been working on this project. And I also have some concerns, and I don't know how much is true and not true, but there are people who are outside the UGA that are trying to obtain water, and that those folks may be on the list. And I definitely understand their interest in obtaining water, but I'm hoping that those folks who, those of us who've been waiting within the UGA will have our needs addressed first.
Very good. Thank you. Sam?
Oh, yeah. Sam? Can you hear me?
Yes. Loud and clear.
Okay. I've been seeing a lot of River Partners ads running on TV. They're running on TV, on the radio, all over the place. So I have a question for you, the PUD commissioners, and I expect an answer in writing. I expect you to go the receipts on this ad. It seems to contain some mistruths. First, it says that the Lower Snake River dams were removed to raise hydro prices by 25%. That's kind of hard to believe. Now, I need you to show your work and your answer. Also, Mike Simpson's plan replaces that output, and do you know that the Nez Perce tribe has a proposal as well? That leads to the second myth-truth, which is better called a lie. It states that the Lower Snake River Dam's output would have to be replaced by fossil fuel-produced power. I don't think Collin County PUD should be connected with dishonest ads or a dishonest lobby group like River Partners. I demand that Collin County PUD disassociate itself from these dishonest ads. I don't think it's our character around here, and I frankly think it'd make people not trust the PUD.
Okay.
That's it. Go ahead and give me your answer.
Thank you, Sam. We'll respond to you. Do we have that, Sean? Do we have that request?
I have that noted. Yeah. Well,
okay,
also.
Good. Thank you, Sam. Are there others?
I am not seeing any other hands raised.
Okay, good. Thank you. All right, agenda revisions. Do we have any agenda revisions, Sean?
None today.
Okay, we'll move on to approval of the consent agenda. There's quite a few items on there. If we have questions or comments, these were sent out previously, or a motion will also work.
I move that we accept the consent agenda.
I'll second the motion.
Been moved and seconded to accept the consent agenda for June the 13th, 2022. All those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Thank you. All right, moving on to business items. Our first item gives me a great pleasure to present this. This is a certificate of achievement for excellence in financial reporting, and this is presented by the Government Finance and Officers Association. And this is no participation trophy. This organization covers the United States and Canada and picks up a few recipients to be awarded this certificate. And I'll go into it right now. The GFOA established the Certificate of Achievement for Excellence in Financial Reporting Program, 1945, to encourage and assist state and local governments to go beyond the minimum requirements of generally accepted accounting principles to prepare annual comprehensive financial reports that evidence the spirit of transparency and full disclosure, and then to recognize individual governments that succeed in achieving this goal. The Certificate of Achievement is the highest form of recognition in government accounting and financial reporting. And there's a nice certificate here. It's, I think, maybe there's one with some gold leaf on it, but I don't have that one. So Laurie Carter and Ruth and all the accounting folks that have been involved, congratulations, and from the commission.
Thank you, Will. It was definitely a group effort to work on this project, and it was really exciting to see it come together, and we're pretty proud of how it turned out.
Okay, good. Thank you. Yeah, we're going to have an awards wall here with a lot of space on it. Okay, so moving on to the next item, we've got transformer update and proposed capacity charge. We've got a resolution 224122 authorizing additions to the 2022 schedule of deposits and charges, and rescinding resolution 223622. John, I think you have that one.
Are you muted, John?
John, we're not hearing anything. Are you muted?
Yes, I was.
Oh, my goodness.
Sorry about that. I said a lot of good things, and now that I'm finished, really, this is a presentation in advance of a couple resolutions, which is essentially a update on transformers. And just to give you the most current information we have available prior to getting to a resolution on a capacity charge, as well as another resolution associated with procurement of transformers. So basically, we still have not yet received any of our transformer orders scheduled for delivery in calendar year 2022. We're approaching halfway through the year, and we've gotten nada. Quoted delivery dates continue to be pushed out. We mentioned January, March, May, July, and by all appearances, even the deliveries for the end of July are going to be pushed out. And our primary issue is associated with 15 to 50 kVA pad transformers. These are the most commonly used transformers for new residential services and developments. So basically, I'm going to go a little bit outside my field to give you some background on the causes. But the underlying issue is the lack of high-grade grain-oriented electric steel used in manufacture of transformer cores. Pandemic restrictions over the last couple of years curtailed production of GOES, or grain-oriented electrical steel, for much of 2020, greatly extending lead times for schedule for 2021 delivery. They went out to pretty much close to a year, and all the deliveries for 2021 were very much delayed. One of the issues that is reported that high-efficiency standards increasingly adopted by nations require the highest grade and thinnest sheets of GOES, further restricting supply. Also, global exports substantially diminished in 2021 through 2022, as some developing nations reduced exports to maintain their domestic supply. Realignment of global trade in 2022 due to the war in Eastern Europe further reduced availability of the GOES steel to developed countries. And for background, transformers production accounts for about 50% of such steel, high-grade steel.
John, can I ask a question here? You mentioned the core steel for transformers. I'm told there's only one manufacturer left in the U.S. for that grade of steel.
That is correct, and I'm going to get into that.
I'm sorry. And then, you know, of course, I got to make my obligatory statement. This is a consequence of government and corporations moving our manufacturing base overseas. So.
Well, yeah, and one could draw that conclusion among others, but and we also want to mention the demand in electric vehicles also playing a significant and growing demand on this same type of steel for the electric motors. So basically, by far, China produces most of the GOES, but almost all of it is kept for domestic use. The largest exporters in 2019, the last information I could find in reporting, is Japan, China, Russia, South Korea, and the United States is pretty far down on the list as number 10. And as Will, you pointed out, there's only one major U.S. steel company producing large quantities of GOES, Cleveland-Cliffs, through their acquisition of AK Steel. But for the states, production is far below current domestic demand. And on 11/19/2021, the U.S. Department of Commerce identified the planned shutdown of two AK plants for the steel as national security threat to the power grid. So this really became highlighted towards the end of last year, but we were seeing the effects, throughout the pandemic with deliveries pushed further and further out. So basically, underground transformers, this is what things look like for us as of, I believe, Thursday of last week. In the first column, the transformers we have on hand. And a couple months ago, 6 weeks ago, we pretty much stopped taking new service orders because we had a deficit approaching 70 transformers and no way to do the construction. To give us an idea of how skim we have enough for emergency supply in the event of transformer failures. What we have on order for 2022 delivery, almost half of these should have already been received, but has not, totaling 326 units. The most common, of course, is a 25 kVA pad transformer, 179. And then we also use dual voltage that operate both in our 12.5 and our 25 kV system, the 25 kV system out west, and these are interchangeable. So when you total them together, it's a pretty substantial amount of transformers we have on order. And once again, none of these have been received this year. The last shipment we had was in December from a new vendor that we selected, and about 20% of those transformers failed upon energizing. So that created some problems for us as well, about 20% failures, trying to get different manufacturers to supply transformers. But they did remedy the problems, and we are getting replacements for the failed transformers, but it's an ongoing problem. Now, there is some concern for overhead transformers, but it's not nearly as much of a concern. We are pretty well stocked. What you got to keep in mind, we have a lot of different kVA sizes and a lot of different voltage configurations for overhead transformers. The ones that are most concerned are the first two columns, primarily because we're starting to use overhead transformers at a planned pad site for emergency use. So we anticipate the transformer uses for these transformers to start diminishing more rapidly. If it goes on for a while, then we will have to restrict use of overhead transformers except for emergency use. Okay, so PUD response since the previous update. Of course, in April, we presented a wide variety of efforts to mitigate transformer supply shortage, and we had a couple of subsequent updates last month. And I'm not going to go into those efforts. I gave a presentation in April that went into a lot of details, and I'm going to focus on what we're doing now and in the near future. We did talk to the City of Port Angeles, and they are providing us with six transformers. 325 kVA, 337.5 kVA transformer. And these are very much appreciated. They will be very much necessary if time goes on for even emergency use. And all we have to do is replace by in-kind when our stock is restored. We also made a purchase of single bushing 17 units of 25 kVA pad transformers from a canceled order from another utility. And that was done in May. These transformers are what we call a ranch runner transformer, single bushing. And we stopped using this type of transformer about 30 years ago because of the lack of flexibility. Most of our underground transformers are loop fed or alternate fed, and these are basically only usable in dead end situations where you have a tap for a transformer and then that's it with nothing coming out of it. Now, what we can do is we can receive these transformers and we can install them at dead-end locations in our system and retrieve the transformers in service now back for use. Those will be two bushing transformers, and they're flexible and to use in all locations. So that's the plan with these transformers. And other note, these are about four times the normal price, $6,800 for transformers. We've never paid this much for transformers of 25 kVA. A couple years ago, 3 years ago, you were getting them for $1,400. And good news is they did ship early, and were shipped last week for delivery next week, I believe. The other thing we did, and it may have been mentioned previously, we joined APTA E-Reliability Tracker, and that's a transformer exchange at a national level. Unfortunately, most of the utilities are asking, and none are really willing to ship out except what we've located on our own.
But John, how many transformers did we get from the city of Port Angeles, and how many do we have on this purchase thing? What's the number?
Oh, the ones we purchased were 17, 25 kVA.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And for Port Angeles, we got 6 units, 25 and 37.5. Mm-hmm. And keep in mind, you can use a larger transformer in an application. You know, you can oversize them. So we look at 37.5 as interchangeable 25. In fact, we no longer normally procure 37.5 kVA transformers. Our standard sizes are now 15, 25, and then 50. But we can use 37.5. Okay, here shortly, we're going to be, Kaylee's going to be giving a presentation for emergency resolution today. We will seek your authorization to procure the following that is a tentative availability. We had informal quotes for these transformers. There's far more money that's being expended on transformers beyond any levels that staff is authorized to buy, but we're going to get your authorization, if you're willing, to procure transformers very similar to what we've already procured. There are ranch runner transformers that are from a PGE canceled orders. The prices are listed. We're getting 15 overhead transformers to, to keep as robust as possible for that line, as well as 20 rebuilt 25 kVA pad transformers and 58 transformers that is available now. Of course, again, we're paying a very high price for these. And when we get these pad transformers, well, of course, every one of these have to go out in the field, do a replacement with these transformers to bring back a field transformer for further use. And each of those change outs are going to be on the order of about $400 labor each. And if we do this, it will allow us to handle the backlog and a limited number of new requests, but new services will be restricted without any, unless we have new procurement opportunities or delivery has what has already been ordered that I mentioned previously, over 300 transformers. Okay, the cost of these transformers, as I mentioned, as well as escalated cost of transformers scheduled for delivery in 2022 and 2023. The ones in 2022, they started out the year about $1,600, $1,800. By the time of December, they were bumping $5,000. And the ones, anything we've ordered for 2023, are north of $6,000 for 25 kVA transformers. And that is the case throughout all Washington PUDs, or anybody who's actually getting transformers. The canceled order was probably from a utility that decided either they misordered the quantities or they're just not willing to pay that amount. So basically, this is going to increase our transformer procurement costs from a normal $800,000 a year to over $2.3 million per year. This is an approximately 2.3 rate impact by the end of 2023. Now, we're hoping that these prices come down, but that's what it's looking like now. So, in addition to the request for authorization for an emergency procurement of transformers on a short notice, we're also asking for consideration today in a modification of deposits and charges that will introduce a new service capacity charge. They will shift elevated transformer costs to customers requesting new service as opposed to placing on rates. Now, that rate increase is not going to be immediate, and we do have a cash reserve, but there will be an eventual 2.3 rate impact for certain by the end of 2023. This capacity charge would not apply to the backlog of existing requests. Those quotes and estimates are already made. We're committed to those. And we'll adjust these capacity charges if elevated transformer costs subside or return to normal. Questions before we get into the...
John? Yeah. The two bullets there, one of them is it indicates a 2.3% rate increase, and then you got the... then the second one is about, doing a charge for installing it as opposed to the ratepayer. Is that in addition to 2.3%?
No, that's in lieu of. So basically, we're faced with a choice that next year we're going to have to come to the board in all likelihood to request. We already approved a 2.25% rate increase, and as things are looking on transformers, it will be unsustainable for next several years without an approximately 2.3% rate increase in conjunction with the prior approved rate increase scheduled to go into effect next year. It's an either or. If we do not institute a capacity charge, and we spoke of capacity charges previously with respect to substation transformers, but we have not at that time envisioned placing a capacity charge on distribution transformers. And the only purpose of the charge is to offset the great escalations in cost to shift from ratepayers who would currently fund those costs for new customers to the requesting customers.
So, John, is there any efforts from the APPA, or this is a national, if not international, problem, the Security Procurement Act, has there been some push to implement that?
The latest information I have is the same information from last month, is APPA is lobbying, I'm assuming Congress, to relax the efficiency standards to make more still available to take care of the dramatic deficit we have nationwide. I am not sure what the success to date has been. But as was conveyed during comments and as was conveyed in the letter we sent to builders, we understand that basically if transformers are not available for new building will not happen. Not in our area. Another thing that we're probably dealing with that's a little bit unusual for most rural utilities, I read last month, and I can't remember the publication, McClallum County was identified as one of 11 rural counties in the nation that is seeing a dramatic growth. Most rural counties are declining. Ours is one of a few that development is very robust. And I imagine that's having, some effects. At least it's hitting us harder.
So along those lines, should we rethink our stocking philosophy on transformers?
Well, and I'm going to go back to this. We have to keep in mind, in a way, everyone's in a panic. We're in a panic, as a matter of fact, but everyone's in a panic. We have a lot of transformers on order. These transformers we have on order were quoted at prices that on average were about 60% of what's now required to pay for new transformers. And we're hoping we will receive these. None of these orders have been out and out canceled. We expect that they may come back to us for an escalation because the quotes that are going out now and we're receiving, they do not commit to either delivery or price. They say that in the quote, so I'm not sure what that means other than you're going to pay what you're going to pay for the transformers received. But the quotes we received mostly last year did not have that language. So basically, we don't want to go out and buy too many transformers and then all of a sudden start receiving 350 transformers that we already have on order. But long term, this is an event that's never happened before. There's a lot of things that have come together to cause this, and we're going to have to give consideration. We've historically tried to maintain, 10 months to a year of supply of the various transformers that we have in stock. And that's, you know, rather typical in the industry. Actually, it's a little bit more. Some utilities are almost just in time deliveries, but we're small utilities. We have to go through distributors, and we're going to have to take a look at that. When all is said and done, if it's, you know, if it's happened once, you have to assume it can happen again. And yes, that's going to have to be looked at really hard.
John, when you say you have a 10 to 12 month supply, is that supply to basically cover existing transformers that malfunction in addition to new hookup requirements, or how does that work when you use the term supply?
It is a supply, and it considers, at least for overhead transformer, storms. So basically, we assume that, okay, we have very few of our transformers actually fail and get taken out of service. A lot of them get taken out because they become rusty, and the container that houses the transformer is, you know, reaching end of life. Sometimes they can be brought down and reworked. But as far as what we keep on hand, it's normal attrition through failures, maintenance activities, and even sometimes replacing transformers before they're ready to be replaced because we made a design change and reconstructed a line. Our past practice is, if the transformer is more than 20 years old, if we're rebuilding a line, we usually put up a new transformer to replace it and brought the one that was in service back for potential future use or other purposes. But we stopped doing that in light of the shortage. But we also include, for overhead transformers, a supply of transformers that can get us through a storm event. You know, we've had storm events that every year, typically between 10 to 30 transformers can be impacted by a major event. When we had the end of 2018 event, I think we had 29 transformers that had to be replaced just due to that storm event.
So, we should kind of relook or rethink whether that is enough, whether we should basically build up a little reserve or something over time, not try to buy them now, of course,
Jim, I couldn't agree with you more. Now, it won't be a lot more transformers, but I think we do need. Now, we're a little bit of a deficit now for these transformers that we identify in red, probably because we're starting to use them for underground applications. But for these particular sizes, yes, they need to be bumped up a little bit. Maybe an 18-month supply is more appropriate, but even that, for overhead, we hadn't had much problem. We still have a pretty good stock of those. But if not, who knows how long something like this would happen, either this time or in the future. So, yes, totally agree.
Well, you can view this as a black swan event, but when you're having to fly baby formula into the country, I don't know what the criteria is. Anyway, we just need to follow this and make adjustments.
Yeah, we'll change based on new information that becomes available. I personally thought we were coming out of this with the diminishing of COVID, but we still kept getting hits. And hopefully those that can make a difference will try to make a difference in this. We do everything we can here locally.
Sure. Other questions or comments?
My only other comment would be that we look at other supplies that we use. I'm thinking wire, to make sure that we have adequate supplies there, because that could be the next bottleneck.
No, that's a good point. And we are receiving longer lead times for almost all electrical equipment supplies. Only transformers have been cut off. But, yeah, wire, underground, insulated underground cable, elbows or terminations for underground, those are things that are, very, very, can't shut us down very quick. and we are looking at that. Also want to mention there's been quite an escalation on those items. We're looking at paying close to 15% more for those type of items, wire, cable, connectors, poles. But the one that's really hurting us the most, of course, is transformers.
Yeah, well, John, you know, Rick points out is true because, you know, we've been in this mentality for the last 20 years in this country and around the world of just-in-time supply, which, you know, it saves money for somebody. But on the other end, if you're the end customer like we are with a critical service, you know, anything could disrupt us. You know, we've seen, you know, example here with the pandemic, or it could be other elements that are facing us with climate change, forest fires, and God forbid, the big earthquake. So, yeah, I think we really ought to look at this and in depth and, you know, maybe you guys come up with some thoughts and recommendations on how we you know, beef ourselves up in terms of, supply chain issues.
Yeah, we plan to do that across the board. Transformers is where we got burned, but it could happen on another item. I'm glad we didn't do just in time, or it'd be really bad for everybody. Another thing that hurt us is, you know, we have distributors, and distributors maintain a stock of transformers that is normally readily available to their customers. Now, if we had an emergency, like a storm outage, they could emergency ship, you know, fairly large numbers of transformers. But when everybody has the same problem, those intermediate stocks get used up pretty quick.
So have we participated in purchasing pools with other utilities and stocking agreements with distributors? And, you know, there's a number of ways that you can get beyond a just-in-time type of mentality.
We don't do just-in-time, and we did have distributor stock. But once again, that broke down during this pandemic. Right. So their supplies got eaten away pretty quick back probably at the end of 2020.
And these transformers we're accepting, they meet industry standards, but don't necessarily meet Clallam's standards, specifications as far as, you know, power loss and longevity and all that. So, compromises here.
Yeah, now they still have to meet the national standards for efficiency, but no, we took out all of our standards that made anything arguably a special item back at the beginning of this year, and we're willing to take high impedance transformers. We're not asking for stainless steel in our climate here. The tanks degrade more rapidly, so we've given that up, but the need is there, and we're going to have to deal with it.
Yeah, so it's going to be maybe a long-term problem.
Thank you, John. That was a good presentation.
Yeah, John, that I'm glad we're on top of that.
Well, I appreciate your patience and understanding. And I think Xanthius might be up now.
Hello.
Okay, we have a resolution now, I believe.
Yeah, I'm Xanthius Christensen. I'm presenting I guess you guys have the resolution for the scheduled deposits and charges changes. And we're hoping to obviously put it to the public and after this for a couple weeks, and then we'll get it approved, and it'll be in state for July 1st. I guess maybe, Shauna, you should probably lead off because your changes are right before mine. So, if she's there.
I am here. Sorry, I wasn't really prepared to present. I was going to answer questions. Totally fine. I just had a couple of little changes in the schedule. that I propose since I heard through the grapevine that opened for just a couple of little things. One of them is to add a necessary fee for the handling of customers at the end of business hours that require customer service reps to stay after and incur sections of overtime. This is a cost that we're kind of paying out and not recouping, and it's becoming more and more common to carefully handle these situations at the end of the day when customers arrive home and discover utilities aren't on. And just to add, we have the exact same fee for meter readers and servicemen, but now that we have so many remote reconnect and disconnect meters, I felt it's very important to add this fee so that they're being charged less to just deal with customer service reps that would be reconnecting or disconnecting them. It's on page 3 at the end of the other non-payment and remote reconnect fees.
Okay, thank you. Are you going to go over the other changes on this?
No, I believe Zampi as well.
Yep. Actually, there's another one on page 2 for a disconnect and reconnect for a net meter. That was just a new charge for just a net meter service.
Yes, thank you. It's just not in there. It's kind of uncommon, but it's been coming up more and more. Usually our solar customers swiftly transform from one owner of the property to the next, and the fee thus far has been a regular charge for a meter reader or meter tech, but it does require a lineman or serviceman to connect or disconnect a solar array meter. It's more complicated, so I wanted to make sure that that charge encompassed the proper personal time.
And then, as you see, this is the capacity charges that John kind of talked about presenting. Here's the fees we're kind of laying out, hoping to get approval for today. And obviously, we'd have till July 1st to move forward with this. I guess anybody really have any questions on this?
But does this capture the increase? Cost of transformers and what we've talked about already?
Yes.
Well, it doesn't immediately, but over time, as we look through 2022 and 2023, we believe if we have the expected number of new services and the economy doesn't crash because of the transformer deficiency, that yes, we'll start recouping the deficit of the or the increase in transformers, and residential are going to be assessed a little bit lower than non-residential because generally, typically your average residential transformer has more than one customer, 1.7, 1.8 customers on average. So that's the difference in the residential charge. Most homeowners would be see an assessment of $1,200 for 200 amps.
Yeah, 200 amps is a typical residential service, so that's the $1,200 would be the cost.
Yes, and if the board is comfortable approving this, we can ask for it today. We have not had this posted for 2 weeks. We've been working on it. If not this meeting, we would request that authorization for the resolution be voted on and approved no later than the next meeting we have at the end of June.
So what's the preference of the commission? Should we post this and approve it at the earliest date, or do we go ahead and approve it now? It looks like we're kind of boxed in here.
I have one question, John. This is unusual. We're doing this. We haven't done it before. We probably look at this as a temporary measure in the event that 2 years from now things get back to normal and the prices come back to more reasonable amounts and so forth like that. We can, I guess, eliminate this if need be. or if it's...
Yeah, yes, Jim. As I said in my presentation, this is based on pricing today. And I'll be honest with you, I don't see pricing going up much higher. You're already getting cancellation of orders. And I would hope that even before a year has passed, that we can start trimming these down based on prices coming down. I don't think they're going to return to what we consider normal, but 25 kVA transformers should not stay at $6,800 per unit when they were only $1,300-$1,400 per unit just 2 or 3 years ago. So if the prices come down appreciably, we'll come back to you sooner to reduce these charges.
Okay, and so that answers that question. And I guess the only other option we might have is instead of doing this or we do partial of this is to not raise this but use other sources of funding like take it out of reserve or something as a short-term measure.
Those are the choices. It's either if you're going to stick to cost of service based, you have to collect the revenue either by rates or through a capacity charge. And then you always have the option of not doing a capacity charge and taking it out of cash reserves. But that does run against the policies associated with cash reserves and such. Now, one thing we were proud of recently that as a lot of utilities have come out of the pandemic, they're really cranking up utility charges for customers. And we did 2.25 for 2 consecutive years. And now many utilities are coming out with 10, 12, 16, even in California, 19% rate increases. And we're trying to stay cost competitive while doing that. We're going to absorb out of rates escalations in other materials, not quite as dramatic as transformers, but also if you look at wages and such, they're going up dramatically as well, not as fast as inflation, but average energy costs year over year has increased about 10% on average nationally, 20% in some jurisdictions. So a staff recommendation would be to assess charges based on cost of service.
Yeah. Well, Will, I guess my view is there's no good solution here, but this seems to be the most fair since we're not taxing existing ratepayers with this temporary problem.
I agree. I never like rate increases, but if we have to have them, I like the idea of charging those that are causing the extra cost rather than the whole customer base.
Yeah, I agree with that. So what's your preference? You want to approve this today or you want to post it and defer it?
Is this something that we should allow the public to have a week or two to comment on?
Yeah, and that is what we anticipated that you might be doing. We did post this with the board package, so it's publicly available. We staff does not see any way out of this. It may generate some feedback in opposition or in favor. We don't know. Mm-hmm. We believe this is one of those 99% certain that, yeah, this is the only way to do it. But like I say, we try to be transparent with the public and make them aware of it before things are approved. So we thought you might want to consider that.
Will, I would argue that let's let the public have some input. There may be some innovative ideas we haven't thought of, and that may come from the public. So if it doesn't hamper staff, I would prefer to wait until the public has had time to have some input.
Okay, is there any impact waiting 2 weeks? Have you got I guess we need to stop recovering cost of service as soon as we can, but...
Yeah, so basically this is not going into effect until July 1st.
Okay.
And
all
for
right,
estimates
that
are done according to the resolution language, really doesn't go into effect for those who are prepared and paid until August 1st.
Okay, good. All right. So do I have a motion on this resolution 2241-22? Or do you, well, we said we'd defer it. Okay, let's defer it.
Yeah, we're going to defer it for 2 weeks.
Okay, good. Yeah. All right, good. Let's move on to the next one, which is Resolution 2243-22, declaring an emergency and authorizing the purchase of various sizes and types of transformers without formal bid for immediate necessary district needs and supply. Kaylee?
Yes. Hi, I'm Kaylee Hunter. Basically, what he just read is we are asking to declare an emergency to procure more of more transformers, more of the ranch runners that John talked about, and 15 overhead transformers, up to $520,000, not including tax. This would be through Westco Anixter. And the reason for the emergency is that these became available. They're available. Many of them are available now and in a very short time. And to go through the normal bid process is taking about a month. And I've already spoken briefly with my other vendors, and nobody has anything comparable to this right now anyways. So that's why we're motioning to get this passed.
Well, I will support this under duress because I feel like there's a number of customers that out there that really want the transformers and they want them now. But I must admit, it feels like highway robbery.
Yeah, I mean the price is not great, but what I can say is the price is fair to quotes that I've been getting. So it's not like they're saying, hey, we have these transformers here, but we're going to charge you $10,000 apiece. The price is fair for the market.
Supply and demand.
So does this meet the definition of an emergency under the procurement codes and so forth that we follow?
Yes. We have no stock. We have a few, you saw in the presentation from John, we have a few transformers for emergency use, but if we were hit with anything hard, we are in an emergency situation.
And I'm sure Sam and some of the other folks that talked at the beginning of the meeting would agree with that.
Yeah, so this is a public health issue. If you cannot, you have people who are looking to move into homes that don't have transformers. This is a public health issue as well.
And the $520,000 is coming out of reserves?
Initially, yes.
Good. All right. So looks like we're in violent agreement here on this one. So do I have a motion?
I move that we accept Resolution 2243-22, declaring an emergency and authorizing the purchase of various sizes and types of transformers without formal bid for immediate and necessary district needs and supply.
Well, I'm not thrilled with this, but I guess I'll second it.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded for approval of Resolution 2243-22, declaring an emergency and authorizing the purchase of various sizes and types of transformers without formal bid for immediate and necessary district needs and supply. The purchase order is to be awarded to Westco Distribution, Inc., reference Sourcewell Contract 121218-WES, for a not-to-exceed amount of $520,000, not including Washington State sales tax. All those in favor?
Reluctant, yes.
Yeah. Okay, so the count is ayes. Those were ayes. And I'm reluctant as well. But okay, well, thank you very much. Our next item is Resolution 2242-22, Surplus Property Water Department. Bowen?
Good afternoon. Bowen Kendrick, Superintendent with the Water Department. Basically, Water Department did some pretty significant spring cleaning. This year, we've got a lot of inventory that's been sitting on the shelf for years, if not decades. So in the interest of cleaning up our inventory, making room for newer, more usable inventory, we've got quite a bit of material that we're looking to either scrap or get on the GovDeals auction site. So appreciate materials, assistance, accounting, and all the work that the Water Department did on this. So we're requesting the Commissioners pass Resolution 2242-22, authorizing disposal of water fittings and appurtenances that are either damaged, outdated, or otherwise do not meet current business needs of the district. Estimated surplus value is $3,294.81. Surplus property will be recycled or listed on the surplus website in accordance with the provided list. That's on page 40 of the package.
Bowen, can we trade any of this stuff for transformers?
Unfortunately, I don't think so. No, sorry, Rick.
Just thought I'd ask.
There's nothing on here that we might get bitten in the future with supply chain problems. This stuff is usable even if it doesn't meet current specs.
No, sir. Our inventory on all these items, I've confirmed myself, is certainly sufficient for, you know, more than a year of our activity on these inventory items. The ones that we're looking to scrap are heavy paperweights. The stuff that we could auction off is not optimal. And like I said, I've confirmed we've got plenty of inventory to get us through for more than a year. Our typical lead times on some of these longer lead time items right now are probably in the 2 to 3 month range. There's nothing in here, though, that we're having a hard time procuring right now. Most of the stuff we're having a hard time with right now is brass components.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, sir.
But I think just to clarify what you said, you basically, this stuff is mostly stuff that we would no longer use because it's not of the right type or size, or it's old and no longer useful. Is that
correct? That's correct. That's correct.
Well, we're not using transformers to meet our present specs either. But okay.
Yeah, we cleaned out a lot of transformers here a few years ago too. So pole mounted ones.
Yeah. Okay, do we have a motion on this one?
I move that we accept Resolution 2242-22, Surplus Property, Water Department.
I second the motion.
Moved and seconded to approve Resolution 2242-22, authorizing disposal of water fittings and appurtenances that are either damaged, outdated, or otherwise do not meet the current business needs of the district. The total estimated surplus value is $3,294.81. This surplus property will be recycled or listed on the surplus website in accordance with the approved list. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay, thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Hey, Will, there's a chat note about the RCW and about the emergency that says, at least the comment says that he doesn't think that we've met the criteria.
Okay. Well, we'll do a second look at that. Staff got that one?
I have that noted, Will.
Okay, good. All right, good.
Thank you, Steve.
Okay, thanks, T. Our next is a BPA post-2028 contract discussion. Anybody have anything?
I don't think there's been any meetings since our last board meeting, has there?
Yeah, WAPAG had a meeting right after our last board meeting, and I attended that. And it was they covered a lot of things, but a lot of them had to do with provider of choice. They went over, first they also went over the BPA quarterly business review and the financial update. On provider of choice, they went through the process for integrated resource planning, which I thought was very enlightening, the steps you have to take. We would take, BPA's taking. And this feeds into the BPA RFP process that's actually kicking off tomorrow for 3 days worth of meetings, and I'm going to try to listen into some of that. They also talked about the system size and allocation straw proposals and also some issues with changes to curtailment and redispatch of transmission business practice. So that's the provider of choice stuff that very interesting meeting, though. One of the things they did is
they showed us some, they worked up some scenarios where you can balance solar, wind, and battery and you know, get it, you know, gave examples of how that could work. Not in any kind of detailed way, but sort of ideas to get us thinking about, do we, when we look at our resource portfolios in the future, are we thinking, you know, creatively about, you know, how we can integrate these newer resources that we only have, you know, kind of had limited exposure to. And this is going to help shape whether, you know, how much, if we're 100% BPA tier one or 95% or 90% or something like that. But anyway, it was a good exchange, and it led to a good discussion within the WAPAG group that was there in attendance.
Okay, thank you, Jim. One of the things that's kind of come to light is that the preliminary budget numbers that BPA is giving out, we had requested at Energy Northwest, I think it was around $32 million to go forward with the studying and analysis of an extended power uprate, which would give us another 180 megawatts out of the Columbia Generating Station, and to start the wheels turning for a licensed renewable of that facility. That's a very attractive financial proposition for the region. And so what we've asked this of PPC and others, participants in Energy Northwest, to kind of push on Bonneville to include some money for those activities. So,
hey, Will, I have a question. Is there any requirement for the public or ratepayers, I guess, more specifically, to actually have a voice or vote or anything like this on something like this at with Energy Northwest, given the history with, you know, lack of, you know, I guess the problem the public or whatever didn't properly engage during the initial nuclear reactor thing back 30, 40 years ago?
Well, the way it works is there's 28 participants, PUDs, that participate in Energy Northwest, which is a joint operating agency. And it's really up to those members to get that back and get public input from their customers. And that's, some of that's going on. I'm not sure it's enough, but there's some of that going on.
Do we need to do anything more explicit here within our PUD in that regard?
Yeah, we could put the numbers out. We could get somebody in from Energy Northwest to put on a presentation. We're a small part of that audience, but it would be beneficial to do that, I think. I'll run that up the flagpole and see what happens.
Thanks.
Okay, other comments on that item? Okay, moving on to correspondence communications. Sean, do we have any?
Yeah, I have two things, Will. The first, it was I received a letter from the Carlsberg Village Properties regarding the Carlsberg EGA water source, and I included that letter in your board packet that was posted. And then I also wanted to follow up on the email correspondence between Lyle Fox and Commissioner Pascoe and myself, and I forwarded you her response this morning, and I'm not sure if you all had a chance to read it yet, but it looked like after that correspondence, she was happy with the answers regarding the tree trimming in our right-of-way, and did have a suggestion that we could put an article in our newsletter about our tree trimming activities, and so I'm going to talk to Nicole when she gets back from vacation about putting that in our next hotline that goes out countywide. Just those two things.
Well, like, you know, this is something that comes up periodically, is that we should underground all our lines for storm protection, trees, on and on. We need to do a little more public education on that, of the horrendous cost to do that and some of the other problems that you would encounter. But thanks, Sean.
Yep, no problem. And that's a good point, Will, that we just for reference, just so the commissioners know, whenever we plan to do major right-of-way clearing like that, all of the customers that are affected do get advance notice through postcards that are sent out, which is how Ms. Fox contacted Terry Lind, our operations manager. So we'll do an article in the in an upcoming issue and kind of go over that process and what the costs associated with that.
And the fact that we have been undergrounding lines for years in problem areas where it's financially justified. So, okay, we're moving on here to commissioner reports. Jim, we've heard some of yours, but go ahead.
Yeah, I guess the other thing, since I did attend the BPA financial plan workshop, it was mostly about debt financing and how the BPA is proposing to do that, you know, trying to get toward a 60% debt-to-asset ratio and so forth. And they're going to, you know, they call it revenue financing, which, you know, that means raise rates is what that means. And so pay for things with rate increases. But they don't like to use that term. Anyway, there was a fair amount of back and forth debate about with the participants about, you know, how much debt to take down and what are the pros and cons, and then in the context of capital spending, what does this really look like? And I think there was a pretty good discussion, particularly around transmission, in that, you know, transmission debt has gone up a lot. And so, you know, but at the same time, there's the need for a lot of transmission upgrades. And, you know, with all renewables and so forth, plus the system's getting old. And so I'm not sure how that's going to end up, but I suspect it's going to be some sort of – we're going to pay one way or the other. I think the question is how much, and particularly on the transmission side, what does BPA need to really be doing in terms of capital projections and forecasts to improve the reliability of the grid, which, you know, is an issue for us big time. Thanks.
Yeah, I was in a meeting recently where they were talking about a additional transmission line across the Cascades, and this is no longer a viable project, but it was $750 million in 10 years to permit and build. So transmission is becoming a big impediment to integration of renewables and, in fact, just reliability of the grid. So.
Yeah, and I suspect that 5 years from now, we'd be looking back and saying, wow, that was a good
deal.
That was
a bargain. Exactly, that's right. Rick, did you have something?
Haven't attended any meetings. I missed the WAPAG, I guess. I had a WAPAG meeting on the 28th, but I didn't, I must have missed the other one. I'm going through a major remodel at home, so I have, my general contractor kicked me out of the house, so we are out of our home for the next 6 months. So hopefully, we spent the last month or so getting packed and squared away, so hopefully things will slow down a little bit now.
I've got a room for rent if you'd like to.
I wish I'd known that a while ago.
No, not really. Okay, thank you.
Hey, Will, this is John. On the, are you still talking the BPA post 2028?
Yeah, we can shoehorn you in. Go ahead.
Okay, yeah. So I just, you know, we had a major concern about the cost of Tier 2 power with the Mid-C prices actually forecast at $60 a megawatt or more. And we did get information from BPA in a meeting that suggested our Tier 2 for BP24 is only going to be about $39 per megawatt hour. And I wasn't in the meeting, but Tyler made the inquiry, since Tier 2 is supposed to be based on market rates, why was it so low? And what was conveyed to us is BPA expects to utilize above contract high water mark generation to basically fulfill the predominance of Tier 2 requirements.
Yeah.
So basically that brought the price down from probably $60 a megawatt to $39, which is a big relief for us. We thought we'd be seeing a really substantial increase due to our Tier 2 obligation. And we'd conveyed that concern previously to the board. It doesn't look like that will be a concern.
Good. Yeah, just an additional point there. We at Energy Northwest received a request due to the high water levels that we're seeing. The hydro system is humming along, and so they've asked that we reduce output from Columbia to 40%, which is somewhat typical for economic dispatch to dial it back to 60% output, but they're now talking about 40%. So should be a lot of surplus power for sale, let's hope. Okay, anything else on that one? Oh, I guess it's my turn for commissioner reports. Bob Schutz, who's the CEO of Energy Northwest, and I went down and made a presentation to the Public Power Council concerning the enhanced power uprate that I've already talked about and the license extension. That group was very supportive, and they've done things since then to indicate that they do support those two activities. The thing about there is a lot of analysis that's gone into this, and I'll try to get that, and we can present it in public here. But so far, that's looking pretty good. One of the interesting things there, the Southwest Power Pool was at that meeting, and they made a presentation all based on a Western RTO. You know, CAISO is putting their hat in the ring big time for that activity. And the Southwest Power Pool is kind of competing with them. And they made some very good points. First thing off, the Southwest Power Pool's governance is different from California. California, CAISO's board is appointed by the governor, and it is California-centric. The legislation that formed it is to benefit the state of California, and that's always been a concern, even when we joined the EIM, that was the case. Southwest Power Pool, different from that, their members actually elect board members, and it's regional, not California, not specific to one state. Let's see here. They have a mixed portfolio of dams and renewables and so on. So that should not be an issue if Southwest Power Pool was picked to be the RTO. An RTO would actually balance the whole Western U.S. market, and so there's a lot of benefit. In fact, it's kind of funny because some years ago, Bonneville was talking about joining an RTO, and all the people in public power had little buttons that said, hell no RTO, but now they've kind of changed their minds, and it seems like a good solution going forward. Anyway, the Southwest Power Pool is looking at establishing an office in either Denver or Phoenix or maybe in Phoenix. So they're moving further west, and they will be in contention with CAISO. And that's probably enough on that one.
Hey, Will, I neglected to share the experience I had with Sean working with one of the customers. I thought Sean did a great job, was very patient, and took the time to explain the reasoning behind the tree trimming. And I just wanted to recognize the good communication that Sean displayed and to make sure that that was acknowledged.
Yeah, and I agree with that. And the response from the customers, I think she appreciated that, taking the time to explain that. So, Sean, you did a great job there.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Okay, we're going to move into staff reports. update on the PUD broadband initiative and project. Sean, are you on?
Yes, sir. I do appreciate that. Thank you. I will share my screen. Just one moment. I will keep this very brief since this was part of the packet. We are based on an excess capacity model that was originally thought up in 1999 and first resolution was in 2001 that essentially says we're going to build for ourselves. We're going to build between all of our substations and warehouses, and then whatever we have that is extra, we will try to carve that out and distribute broadband across it.
So that system was overbuilt to provide future needs of the utility, but also to provide open access to on a wholesale basis to our customers.
That is correct. Although it wasn't originally built just as a wholesale model, it was actually thought of, I think, beginning in 96 as the future of SCADA between substations, and then when the other utilities and a few other utilities in Utah and Arizona came up with the idea of possibly distributing broadband over their networks, then Washington State utilities, I think there were six of them at the time, started to consider that as well. And I wish Fred was able to comment on it because he was here for the beginning of all that.
He's got the history. So basically, though, under law, up until about a year and a half ago, we only had wholesale authority.
That is correct. So I've also provided a map. This map shows all the grants that were awarded between 2021 and January of 2022 throughout the state. Clallam County is a recipient of 20,000 plus another $20 million plus another grant of $4.5 million for an area, which I have on the next slide. And you can see the other counties that also received grants. I don't think I need to go through all of them, but our neighbor Jefferson County and a few others as well.
I noticed that we got more than everyone, but looks like Lewis.
Yes. And Spokane County also received another grant that's not on this map, and they also received another $19 million on top of that.
Oh, they blew us away.
They really did. This is just a small overlay showing where Clallam County received their grant. This was a fiber-to-the-home model area, and as you can see here in this overlay, it's between the Elwha River and the west end of Joyce, just shy of the Lyra River, and this is all of the aerial area that we have for power, just to kind of give you a reference. Their grants, again, we received two. They were two separate grants, one from the Washington State Department of Commerce, which is under the is over the Washington State Broadband Office, which was the $4.5 million, and then they received the $20.2 million directly from the Department of Commerce. I kind of reference. Go ahead.
John, are these specifically to the PUD? I know we're working jointly with the county. So what?
Nope. This is directly to the county. The county filed for these and was awarded for this. They will then go out for bid proposals. Post-bid proposals to have it built, and this is a fiber-to-the-home build.
Okay, good.
This has nothing. The PUD is not involved in this unless we were to bid on building any portion of it.
But we did provide support.
Oh yeah, we were part of the BAT groups, the Broadband Action Team, since the inception of it. And as a matter of fact, most of the maps that they based all of their models off of were our maps, and we also went over our infrastructure and provided some insights on where maybe could or couldn't build.
Now, we've got about a 2,000 square mile district here. $20 million didn't sound like it's going to go very far. So what's the total build out view? What's the cost estimate for that?
Well, they had two different contractors that said that they thought they could do it for $25 million. And they worked with Wave and one other carrier to come up with their dollar amounts. I'm not privy to how they came to that conclusion. I just know that that is what they were awarded, and I know the areas that they were awarded for.
Well, yeah, but that's not built out to every home, fiber to every home in the district. Looking at Jefferson, they have a much smaller footprint than Clallam, and they came up with about a $100 million cost estimate.
It is just for this footprint area right here.
Okay.
So this is from just the Elwha River to the end of Joyce. And again, this is only in the areas that we have aerial. This a lot of the areas that you see that are not covered are underground. So cover that. Grant applications. There was a question on what we have applied for, and in the last few years, we've applied for 4 state or federal grants. We were not awarded any of those grants, but we certainly did apply. Our middle mile grant is the one that I'm trying for the most. That is to build between the Elwha River all the way through Joyce, across BPA, Two Forks. And the latest grant we're going to apply for here is an NTIA. It's infrastructure Investment Jobs Act, and is a 30% match grant, and a small estimate of between $11 and $13 million to build it. Any questions on that? I know I'm going fast. I apologize. I know I'm last, and everybody wants to get done.
So, question. As far as going to retail broadband service, there's only one utility, I think, in the state that's doing this so far, and that's Jefferson. They've got a much smaller footprint and also more high-density population areas. We're going to get the question whether or not we should go to retail, and I think Jefferson is passing the cost of this on to their electrical customers. You had any comments on that?
I would say I have opinions. I don't know.
The ISPs have opinions as well.
Yeah. I do what has been asked of by the commissioners in the past, and that is to make our ISPs as successful as possible. I have tried to keep our costs to a minimum and to be as supportive as I can be without any of it being subsidized by the electric utility.
In the past, we've talked about forming LUDs or LIDs for broadband.
That is correct. There are maybe 4 or 5 different potential models that other utilities used. There's one utility that does their fiberhoods. They typically do those in a zero competition area where nobody else is built out. There are LUDs that will do taxing of property within a small neighborhood to help fund those projects, and those taxes go to the homeowner of that area, and once they leave, then they have to pay it in full. There are 2 utilities that split off a telecom division and then try to work on their own as their own telco and not be subsidized by the utility, and then, of course, they're full retail. And if I could just say without throwing an opinion out there, there is only one utility in the state that is considering and doing full retail, and that utility has not done broadband before.
Thank you.
I can remember when I worked at PNUCC, there were a number of co-ops that went down the path of offering retail, and I cannot recall one positive outcome from those utilities. They got in hot water, and it was a problem, and I personally do not believe that electric utility customers should be subsidizing broadband.
Yeah, I guess the case that comes to mind is Grant PUD years ago made the commitment of fiber to the home. And, you know, Grant has dams. They have a lot of revenue. They keep their electric rates low. But over time, they found that the cost of doing that was so high that they ended up having to raise electric rates. And they also have been applying and been the recipient of a number of grants to try to complete that process. So there's some big dollars involved in doing this. And so,
yeah, and those dollars are only getting bigger.
Yeah, well, exactly.
Currently, I am working on a public project. This came about when we were applying for an ARPA grant with the county to potentially build up to a community that doesn't have a lot of broadband, and that is Lake Dawn up Hurricane Ridge Road. They are kind of an island in a way, and I am currently working on a 1 gig microwave point-to-point to then serve off either wireless or fiber through two different ISPs in that area. And potential projects, kind of waiting here back on some of the grants that both Jamestown and the Elwha applied for. Elwha wanted to expand over to Ranger Road from the lower Elwha Road, and they wanted to capture a couple of locations along the way. Jamestown is wanting to expand out towards Jamestown and also towards Diamond Point, where they potentially will build another structure out there. And so those are some of their requests, but I have not heard back. And there's also a community up Hooker Road at the top that is asking for fiber to the home. We had offered that we would build up to a certain point and then an ISP would take over from there to the actual fiber to the home, but more than happy to provide some kind of a backbone to give them the broadband that they're asking for.
So these grants, are they mainly matching grants or not?
For which the Elwha tribe and yes, the middle mile grant that I'm looking at right now is it's a 70-30. So we would have to provide a 30% match.
Okay. Good.
And on that 30% match, we have to guarantee federally that all the infrastructure is open access the entire life of the project, which would be 20 years. Same as what we did for BTOP when we built out to Blend in the past.
Thank you.
And then I just have a quick little fact page in case somebody wanted some little tidbits of information. We support ISPs on net. We currently have over 120 miles of fiber, not including all the drops to individual businesses and homes. And then I kind of put some of the footage and some just little facts on if I do that middle mile build, breaking it down between Laird's Corner and Silverado Substation, 75,000 feet, Silverado to Sappho, 155,000 feet with 62 water crossings.
Oh.
And then Sappho to Forks, 85,000 feet with 6 river crossings. And potentially for an ISP, maybe 2,400 homes you could be picked up anywhere between Joyce and the south side of Forks. I know that was really quick, but I'm happy to answer any questions that anybody has about anything that has to do with broadband. Awesome.
Yeah, very good. Thank you.
Nice presentation.
Oh, thank you, sir.
Okay. What? I guess I'm, Sean, are you still on?
No. Yes, sir. What can I do for you?
What's going on as far as some of these alternate technologies like Starlink? Is there any activity in this area for those?
Absolutely. We ourselves at the PUD actually just ordered and received a Starlink dish, and I'm kind of excited to play with that. I did that for out in CQ to look at potentially hooking up one of our sites out there that is too remote for any other kind of communications. Now with Starlink having their business side of broadband, more and more people are looking at the paying the $500 and the $2,500 up front to get the business grade, which allows them significantly higher download speeds. In terms of reliability, there's still gaps. The constellations still have gaps in them. They don't have everything spaced out to their 33 miles between every satellite in one constellation. They still have a little bit of problem with downloads at whatever base camp that is. In our case, it hits Redmond, and then the data goes all the way to California, and that's how they get to the internet for most people that have Starlink here. The biggest complaints I've heard is just those gaps. See, if you want to do two-way streaming, like on a Zoom call with us, you occasionally get a 5, 10, 15 seconds, little bit of a pause, and then it picks back up again when the next satellite comes into view. Also, I've heard from two people, one at Lake Sutherland and one at Bell Hill, that they've noticed that their speeds have gone down a little bit since they first received them. But for the most part, it's pretty reliable. T-Mobile and Verizon are working very hard to provide 5G plus services out here, and I know that there's two companies that are looking at doing small cell technology along the Highway 101 between Forks and Squim. I haven't heard anything new on it other than they came and asked me questions about infrastructure. Other technologies haven't really changed. I mean, other grants have been received and awarded to CenturyLink and Wave to expand their services out west. And as they receive their funding, they're going to be expanding further while the county is working on their project as well. So that's what I can say for broadband out here that I know of.
So your opinion. These technologies, as far as download and upload and data rates and the cost of service and all that, what's the possibility that some of these technologies would result in a stranded asset as far as installing fiber? Is that a possibility or not?
I'm sorry, I don't quite understand the question.
Well,
when
if you
say
install
stranded
fiber and people opt for Starlink and it's satisfactory.
Oh, yeah. No, I take rate on things is kind of an industry standard of about 40%. So if, say, that area someone built every home, not every person's going to take it. And as you go out west, I think you find, there might be people that say, I want more, I want this, I want that, but not everybody wants more. Most, I would say, a good portion of people that live out there know that they don't have good service and live there with a purpose. That said, technology always increases. Technology always improves. I can't really think of a time where technology didn't get better in terms of wireless or wired technologies. So do I think building fiber out there when everybody else is also getting grants and wanting to do things is a wise move or investment? I'm not certain. I don't think so. But that wouldn't be that I wouldn't do it if someone asked. It's more of there's just more competition. Power, we don't really have any competition. Water, we don't really have any competition unless someone drills a well. With broadband, I have how many different? I got OneWeb, Starlink, Blue Origin for Amazon. Those are three internet providers. You got HughesNet, also an internet provider, all satellite based. You have CenturyLink, you have Wave, you have OliPen, you got Fat Beam, you've got Crestcom, you know, Computer Solutions. That, and I'm positive I'm missing a few. Oh, yeah, T-Mobile, Verizon, everybody else. I mean, that's my competition. When someone says, hey, can you build me broadband out here? You know, I every single one of those people will probably charge less than I would because they're a private company and they can bankroll some of it and hope to make money up somewhere else, whereas we, as a public entity, based on our current model, you know, as excess capacity, we don't subsidize.
And then 5G could impact that as well, I suppose.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, not only can and will, but it is. I mean, yeah. I can think of a few people that, I don't think there's anybody on this call, but there's people that VPN in to work purely on their cell phone or their whatever kind of MiFi they have, and seems to suffice for them. So there's a lot of options for people in the broadband world versus there is for water and power.
Okay, great. Any questions or comments on Sean's presentation?
Good presentation, Sean.
Yeah,
thank you, sir.
Very good. Thank you very much. And enjoyed your opinions, too.
Oh, I'm sure I'll suffer for them later. I hate it when people ask me my opinion, and I'm sure someone cringed.
You know what they say about opinions.
Yes, unfortunately. Thank you, sir. Have a good day.
Thanks,
Sean.
Okay, board action items. T, did we capture some?
Yes, we did, Will. I have three. We have a request from Commissioner Purser to respond to the public comment regarding Northwest River Partners. We have a request to look into the feasibility of reviewing our existing related electrical equipment supplies other than transformers to determine if we should build up additional inventory in order to be able to recover from any potential supply chain issues down the road. And we have the third item to ensure that Resolution 2243-22 complies with RCW 39.04.280.
On the last one, commissioners, when we looked at the emergency resolution before you, one of the stipulations in RCW is that it presents a real immediate threat to the proper performance of essential functions. And staff determined that the resolution is in compliance with the law. However, commissioners would like, we could run it to legal counsel for further review.
What's your preference?
I think it'd be a good idea.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, we'll do that.
Will, I also have a request that could we have a presentation by Tom addressing the questions of water for the UGA?
Yeah. Actually, not to spoil the next meeting, Rick, but we do plan on having some information on the UGA at the next meeting. Tom has been working diligently with the county on a memorandum of understanding between the two parties regarding the Carlsberg UGA, and so that will definitely be on the next meeting.
Great. Thank you.
And I think Tom has given a number of presentations. Of course, we need an update frequently, I suppose. I'm going to go back and capture something I probably should have reported. I went to the NWPPA meeting, which was...
Will, I can barely hear you.
Oh, my goodness. What's going on? Hold on. Microphone, same system, headsets, test speaker, audio settings. Well, I'm let's see how that
Maybe
works.
You can just move your mic up.
Okay.
If technology fails, go to mechanics, I guess.
That works.
Okay, good. I attended the Northwest Public Power Association meeting a couple of weeks ago, and I was there representing Energy Northwest, but also during that I was, since Doug Nass got a Lifetime Achievement Award from the NWPPA, I was there to receive that as well. So congratulations to Doug. Linda Goth also received an award, or in fact, she received two awards. But anyway, it was an interesting meeting. The Participants Review Board of Energy Northwest West held a meeting there where we did a presentation. The CEO did a presentation on the EPU and the license extension, well received, and seemed to be very supportive of those activities. And they elected new officers for the Participants Review Board. So that was well attended. Okay, moving on to our next comments from the public. T, do we have any?
Yes, if any members from the public would like to provide public comment, please raise your hand or unmute and state your name. And I am seeing none.
It's surprising I saw hands up before public comment, but oh well. Okay, then no executive session, so if there's no other business to come before the board, we will adjourn. Thank you to everyone.
Thank you, commissioners.